Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. It is my pleasure today to welcome back Christian Ruffert, who is the CEO and founder of TerraGens. Christian was, of course, our guest, as all longtime listeners will know, back, I think, in episode 95. Could that be, Christian? Anyway, it's been a while. 91, episode 91, back in 2021. And of course, you spoke at GeoMob London almost 10 years ago now, Christian. So it's been a while. So I thought it was time we'd get you on here and get an update. But I think the pieces that are most relevant for our audience is the fact that you are, of course, selling a geospatial service, particularly to a kind of a non-GIS customer base. You can tell us about some of the challenges of that. And specifically, your service is mapping something that's invisible, right? Which is mobile coverage. So I'm sure there are some very interesting angles around that. So I will leave it to you to introduce TerraGens.
All right. Well, thank you, Ed, and thank you for having me back. I must be doing something right. So we run TerraGens. We describe ourselves in not the greatest elevator pitch, but we say we are a crowdsourcing and geoanalytics business. What that means is we crowdsource mobile network performance data. We do that by working with location-enabled apps and collecting data about how mobile networks work in a specific place and time. We do that, we collect that data in a privacy-respecting way. But we have what is technically known as lots and lots and lots of data. And that data comes with a location context, basically where it was measured. And then we process that and we create what we call mobile network insight products, which again is not the best pitch, but basically information about how mobile networks work at a very specific location, and that location tends to be with a granularity of about 50 meters by 50 meters. We use H-tree indexing, which is one of my favorite geospatial little tricks. And we tend to sell that into the wider telecom ecosystem. So not only operators and regulators, which are the natural market for this, but everybody that depends on mobile networks for the success of their business. So that could be anything from what is called IoT, so Internet of Things businesses, local councils, real estate, a bunch of markets that exist in that ecosystem around that. And the last thing I would say is we offer our services in bite-sized chunks. So traditionally, people have sold this information in very, very large contracts. We sell it in bite-sized contracts to them, people that need to know, you know, how a mobile network works in a certain location. And as you said, it's quite funny because we sit at this intersection of geospatial and data. And data that is not immediately visible, people see their bars on their phone, but how do you make that location data digestible for somebody who isn't a location expert is one of the big challenges or one of the great joys of our business.
Well, very nice. Welcome back. Just to clarify, you're doing this worldwide? You're doing this just in the UK?
What we tend to say is we do this in Europe and North America and beyond. So it's not quite worldwide because there's big swaths of Africa, big swaths of the Amazonian rainforest where, you know, it's difficult to get data from and even more difficult to monetize it. But, you know, most parts of the modern world are covered these days.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes, the thing that's so interesting about this is, you know, this is a problem every single person has experienced of, like, you know, trying to get signal on your phone. Everyone is familiar with it, and yet you're actually quantifying it and mapping it and repackaging that. And the customers are mainly consuming this via an API, or is this kind of a visual interface, a map, or this is like kind of raw data, or how are they?
That's very interesting. So when we first started, we had this thing that said, okay, we are going to sell this little information element that will be most useful when combined with other information elements. So, you know, coverage with social demographics or coverage with traffic or anything and anything. So we said, we'll make an API so people can easily integrate it into their GIS or something else. And, you know, because selling it by itself doesn't seem to, make much sense. But when we describe the context and we show the API documentation, it turns out that, and this is one of the big lessons of the tech world, people talk a lot about tech. Not many people actually understand it. So when you discuss an API and the Swagger Hub documentation and everything, probably about 5, maybe 10% of your audience actually knows what you're talking about and can visualize what you are on about.
Right.
And we found that very hard going. So we switched tracks somewhat and we created a nice shiny front end, a software as a service interface. And we said, look, you can go here, click here, and it will tell you the information in that location about the network, and it looks really nice. And if you press here, you can download it. And people went, oh, this is really great. I get it now. This is useful. And then they would use the system for a while, and then they would go, it's a bit boring to click the mouse every time we need to interrogate this system of this data. Is there a bulk uploader, or is there even better an API? Because I've been told that that's the thing to have. And we go, of course, what an intelligent question. But I'm telling this story in a slightly jaded way, but I think it's very, very important to understand that everything that we talk about technology, people don't care about technology, and very few people know about technology. And if you're selling something, you have to articulate it, what it is, and that articulation is, you know, visualization, demonstration, whatever you want to talk about it. And then from, oh, that's what it is, and then drill into the technical detail of how it gets delivered, but not the other way around. Don't start with, you know, it's delivered as an AI agent and all these kind of words. Yes, they are fashionable if you live in that world of the press releases and the social media and all that. You think everybody understands it, but actually very, very, very few people understand it. And you have to make the concept come alive before you dive into the technical.
Well, what you're describing is so common, though. I think every engineer has had the experience where, you know, they spend weeks building some amazing dashboard. I mean, particularly kind of in the pre-AI time where it's like, once we finally get the data in one place and we can look at it, then we'll know, you know, then we're going to be making much smarter decisions and we're going to finally, like, you know, crack this problem. And then, of course, no one ever looks at this dashboard, or, you know, they look at it for one day and then it just sits there unused. And it's a real problem. It's a real problem.
Yeah. So and that comes back, which is my other favorite analogy, which is the hammer and nail question, right? And this is a lesson we had to learn as a business. I'm an ex-management consultant, and I love talking great concepts and making great PowerPoints about, you know, great ideas and forces coming together and matrices and all that. But in the end, somebody will buy your product because it solves a specific problem. Not a big problem, well, hopefully a big problem, but it's not a big problem in the intellectual sense necessarily. It is just a challenge they have. And if you can answer that challenge and say, here is, you know, and I say, you know, somebody has a nail and is trying to bang that into a piece of wood with their hands and their hands all bloody, and you come with them and say, here's a hammer, they will not care about how cleverly the hammer has been engineered, what your other vision is for, you know, implements to drive nails into wood. What counts is that now their hands are no longer bleeding. They can just bang the hammer and it's done, and they pay £5. And you have to sell your product as a hammer and nail product, right? And here's your problem. Here's what it solves. Doesn't matter how clever it is. Doesn't matter how genius it is. And often, in our experience, the simpler it is, the better it will sell, right?
But one big challenge there is, especially when you're selling to large organizations, how do you find the guy who has the bloody hands, right? Or not, maybe not the guy, but the person who can actually make the decision to say, you know what, we need the hammer and we have a budget and let's do it. Let's buy the hammer.
It's a lesson that I had and that I always tell. It's, again, another analogy is that if you want to, and this has come from military background. I do love, you know, listening to the old World War II podcast. But I always say that as a business, you have to follow the Viet Cong or the Taliban strategy. You don't start attacking the big cities where big, you know, and in the marketing context, what is that? Big organizations. You find small organizations where it is clear who has the problem and it's clear who has decision authority. And you address those first, and you work your way to the big accounts. I think there is nothing, especially if you're selling a solution to a slightly ill-defined problem that is owned by, you know, not quite clear where in the organization. In big organizations, you can spend months and years having meetings with people and going through committees and trying to pin down who has the problem. And yes, there is a big contract at the end, but it's also a very, very big timeline. So in terms of finding the problem owner and spotting the guy that's going to, or the person that's going to pay money for it, we are a firm believer in talking to smaller organizations first, because it's easier to penetrate them. It's easier to find the problem owner. The problem owner usually has much clearer decision authority. And from there, you then hone your pitch and your understanding of what people really care about. And then you go to the big guys. But from my personal experience, I would say, don't start with selling to the big guys, because it's a world of pain.
Right.
Not only you find, you know, once you found the person, they have to go to the procurement department that has to have, you know, it's endless.
Nightmare.
Go to the small guys, because they also will tend to be more creative and will be willing to suggest, to consider other solutions from non-big brand names just because it solves a problem that they have, right? So go small and then go big, which for military terms is first hold the villages, then attack the cities.
Christian, take us through some of the product advancements. I mean, obviously this core concept of, you know, kind of mapping the network, the mobile coverage it has been the vision from day one, but I know you've been working on some very interesting new products that I think would be interesting for the audience to hear. So particularly on indoor signal checking and things like that. So take us through some of that.
Yeah, we would love to. So our initial product was what we call Signal Checker, which basically was the concept: you drop a pin anywhere on the map, we will tell you the signal that you can expect by operator and by technology in that specific location, and we will qualify why we think it's that. So it was a combination of being quantitatively exact, but also being honest about where we got it from and transparent. We've evolved that to another product that we call Indoor Signal Checker, which is essentially the same concept. You select any building, let's say, in the modern world. And it's really lovely that you can do that now with things like Overture data or OSM data. You select the building shape on the other side of the world. Yeah. And we will then, you know, with our data, with our algorithms, give a view of the internal signal propagation inside of that building.
How do you do that, Kishik? I mean, that's fine, because doesn't it depend on the material that the building is made out of and the shadow of the nearby buildings and the, I mean,
yes,
that's phenomenal.
So it's phenomenal and it's not, in the sense that we don't account for things like the building fabric, the building age, because as you rightfully point out, more recent buildings will have much higher insulation quality and signal insulation quality than older buildings. So a Victorian building will let signals go through fairly easily. A building that's built in the last 5 years, nothing is getting through, more or less. So we don't account for that. So we do, let's say on average a building will, degrade a signal by X. Here are signals that we have measured around that building. Here are signals that we have measured inside of that building, and we create a machine learning style algorithm that says, and here is what we think it's going to be inside of that building.
So,
go ahead.
Well, I'm just because, as you say this, I mean, for any building in the developed world, I mean, this sounds like just an absolute colossal amount of data.
Yes, it is quite a colossal amount of data. I don't know the exact numbers, but my guys keep giving me. I mean, we take in several hundred million data points a day.
Wow.
Our database stretches into the terabytes. It's a bit like Captain Kirk on the old Enterprise, right? There's the guy at the bottom going, "It cannot hold, Captain. It cannot hold, Captain." You say, well, 10 minutes longer, 10 minutes longer. That's my team for me. But yes, it is quite, and there's a lot of work that we do around keeping that huffing and puffing machine of data ingestion, data storage, data retrieval, optimization of all those things, which has nothing to do with geospatial. It is just data. The interesting thing is the way that you store that data and how you retrieve that geospatially is actually quite complicated. Because, if you just do the basic, give me everything but a lat long that's bigger than this and smaller than that, and you have to run that through your database indiscriminately, that is not the best way of doing things. So there's a lot of time that we spend, which gets me to another of my bugbears, which is, GIS is not a separate discipline. GIS is just a sub-discipline of IT and data analytics. And I think one of the interesting things is that not a lot of people have actually realized that. But to come back to our product, so we don't account for building fabric and all that. We have been looking at getting data about building fabric, and we think we might have a way of doing that. But the point of it is not to be absolutely exact. It is to have a good enough view of the world at a good enough price point. So the way that we describe that service is, think of us of what we provide as casual dining versus Michelin star dining. If you go for casual dining, you pay these days maybe 20, 30 quid for a nice pizza and a glass of wine, and maybe a tiramisu after that. It's not going to win great awards, but for the amount of money that you pay, it's actually quite good, right?
Gotcha.
And whereas the Michelin star restaurant is, you pay £100 upwards. It's going to be fantastic wine. It's going to be, the taste is going to blow your mind. The waiter is going to be very, very attentive, but it is expensive. Similarly, if, for example, you want to deploy 500 fixed wireless routers in a number of premises, which is one of the use cases, yes, you can send out an engineer to go and walk the premises with a device, and that will cost you 500 to £1,000 upwards per building. You will get very, very good data, but it'll be very, very costly. Or you can use our data and it'll cost you 100 quid per building. It will be pretty good. It'll give you a very, very good sense of what's going on. Not perfect, but a pretty good sense. And you can basically manage the risk around your deployment of your fixed wireless infrastructure.
Gotcha. So the main competitor is doing some very exacting on-site survey.
Yes. So, and again, and that's one of the challenges, again, that we have in our business, or one of the interesting experiences is, you know, data versus engineering, because, you know, engineers like things to be exact, and they have a limited appreciation or understanding. I have to be very careful because I work with a lot of engineers, but cost does not always come into the equation. And what we say is, this is a, you know, data is never black and white. It's always a balance of probability, a direction, and you can attach confidence to that, but it's never going to be, I am absolutely certain. You say, I'm willing to bet good money that it is that way. So data is a bit more fuzzy, but it's also, it can also be a lot more cheaper. So yeah,
we have a very similar situation in our business where we're using OpenStreetMap, and, you know, sometimes it's great and sometimes it's less great. And you're absolutely right. People don't, engineers don't always, can't always manage that in their heads. The idea that the data may not be perfect and bet nevertheless may be good enough.
Yeah. And you have to, you know, a lot of engineering can't afford to be just good enough.
Right? Yes.
So we have to be appreciative of that. But at the same time, you have to go, is it worth to get to the end degree of certainty for this product?
Right.
You know, what is the, you know, and that's where, you know, your economic, your commercial reasoning comes in. So that's our indoor service product. And that's getting very, very good traction now in the market, and people like it.
But this raises an interesting question, Christian, because this is another thing we see in our business, which is obviously much simpler than yours, where we're just selling geocoding, which is a very kind of standard product. But to what extent do you need to educate and handhold the customers and help them even understand how to use the data and how to implement that? Because this is the other problem. Like now you've finally gotten to the person who has the bloody hands, right? And you convince them to pay you and you sell them the hammer. And then they need to then convey to their team the value of the hammer and how to use the hammer and all these kind of things. And are they able, and you know, the amount that they're going to use the hammer, and thus the amount that they're going to pay you, is depends on how well they're able to communicate it internally.
Yes. And in retrospect, I should have done a much less clever business and a much more simpler to understand. My life would have been a lot more easier. I just tried to be too clever for my own good. But it's a very, very, very key point. And again, one of the key lessons that we have learned in this is it does not matter how well you intellectually argue why this is a good thing.
Right.
The key that gets people across is what we call the grandma test. And the grandma test goes something like this. This comes from our outdoor signal checker. We go, you know, we can check any signal anywhere in the inhabited world, in the Western, you know, in Europe, North America, and a few other places, right? And they go, wow, that's really cool. But it sounds a bit too good to be true. My grandma lives in this village here, next to the church. And when you go there and you go to the left of a church, there is no signal, but on the right, it's really great. There'll be a story, something like that. They won't tell you that. They'll just go to this place and tell me what you know. And we'll go to that place, and 98% of the time we get it right. We say, well, it's not great here, but it's great here. It'll be like this little village or a little corner where just around the corner of the street, things are a bit weird.
Yeah.
And our data captures it. And that kind of goes, oh my God, this is really good, right? That kind of like...
aha moment.
That aha moment, which is actually much more emotional because it's not a big scientific sampling of things or whatever. It is just that one test, that one case where people went, we did this and it worked. Oh my God, this was so fantastic, right? And it's that kind of like emotional... aha moment connection, that if you find the person that has that in the organization, and can then take that forward, that's when you have a winner. And so we tend to have a lot of focus to anecdotes, war stories. With the indoor signal checker, so what happens a lot is you have these indoor coverage systems that get installed somewhere. And we do a lot of business with businesses that do these kind of things. And they'll go, okay, here's a shopping center in Spain. Tell me what you know. And we'll go, oh, that seems to have very good coverage with this operator. They go, yes, because we installed a indoor system for that operator just, you know, 12 months ago. And I can see that in the data. And, you know, that the link to that primary experience, to that war story, when you hook that, then people go, this is really good. I understand this. And it's bridging from the abstract, the numerical, the technical, to that real life experience, that hook, that is really, really important. And again, abstracting everything that is so clever, everything that is so, you know, whatever, that aha moment is where you hook people and you get them to use it.
Very nice, and hopefully also relevant to many of our listeners out there as they contemplate how to sell their own technical services. So So what's next for Terragence? What can we expect looking forward?
A new product that we are starting to work on or is almost there, again, is talking about solving the abstraction problem, is that it's a tool to visualize everything to do with mobile coverage, but also what happens if I install a mast here or there, which is kind of helping to solve the dual-mindedness that a lot of people have about mobile coverage. Because on the one hand, everybody wants mobile coverage, but nobody wants to have a tower in their backyard.
Right.
And articulating how the tower in the backyard actually solves the problem of the coverage has actually never been done in a way that people of a general intelligence can understand. So we are building a tool to address that. We have recently won our first contract using this tool with a local authority in the Arizona desert, which found us on the internet and asked us a few questions because they had some issues with towers. You'd expect towers in the desert not to be a problem, but they are. So zoning and all that kind of stuff is an issue in those locations. So they reached out to us and say, could we solve this? I think it's really awesome because it's an area where you have the old Route 66 running through. It has these like spectacular, it's not very far from the Grand Canyon. So
it's got like mesas and stuff. And
it's got everything.
And tumbleweed.
And the thing that I find so interesting is that sitting in my office in Northwest London, I can get a perfect ID using our tool sets of the geography of the mobile coverage situation of the tower locations in that location. And I can analyze that and provide them a good report on what is possible. And there's something magical about that.
That is cool. That is very cool.
That is truly, truly magical. That really gets me excited. And beyond that, this also ties back to our focus on the US markets. So we're doing a big push in, you know, whereas previously we've been focused very much on Europe. We are now pushing into the US market with our various offerings. So, you know, the what we call our tower planner, digital twin offering, our indoor offering, pushing that into the US and bringing that. And as we do that, I read this article about IT project managers, but I think it's relevant for entrepreneurs as well. It talked about pioneers, settlers, and town planners. And I think we've been in the pioneer stage for quite a long time. And I actually quite enjoy pioneering, you know, finding the guy with the bloody hands and saying, mate, here's a hammer, you know, do that. We're getting more into that settler stage. You know, things have to be organized a bit more. you have to delegate better and more. I'm not sure if I ever will be a town planner, but, you know, it's interesting to observe that transition from one to the other and what that means. And yeah, I think that's going to be the next challenge or whatever you want to call it.
For the next phase of the business.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Christian. That's fantastic. And it's very cool to hear a success story of, as you say, as you know, I remember when you started, you know, it was one guy in North London, and now you're out in the Arizona desert. So
there we go. I don't know if that's
I guess we can fairly say you've come a long way. So whether it's in the right direction or not, you'll have to tell us. But no, it is very cool. Congratulations. I mean, it sounds like a very impressive technical offering.
Yes. And it looks good as well. Which again, you know, it's we used. And it's quite amazing what you can do with open source data and some technical cleverness.
Well, Christian, rather than just talk about that, hopefully at some point you're going to again come present that at GeoMob London, so we can see how beautiful it looks. As listeners will not know, but I regularly harangue you to come back and give us a talk. So some point it's going to happen, I hope.
Yes, like with this podcast, you know, eventually.
Like with this podcast, exactly. Eventually, I wear people down. So, very nice. Any final thoughts you want to leave the listeners with, and then of course, how can if this conversation has raised questions, how can people best get in touch with you?
Yeah. So the best way of getting in touch with us is actually email. I'm Gen X, so I don't do a lot of social media. So info@terragens.com, that's Terragens with one R, is the best way, or on LinkedIn. That's where I do a little bit of social media. Parting thoughts. Well, I think one is, you know, GIS and geospatial is not a thing. It's a thing that supports another thing. So always, well, there's two ways of looking at this, right? Either you swim in the geospatial pond and you sell to other geospatial people that kind of get what you are. I think that's an interesting pond, but that's quite limited. I think the bigger and more interesting pond is everybody that kind of works in a domain that doesn't think of them as being geospatial, but could really benefit from geospatial stuff. And going after those is much more interesting and much more fun, but also much more challenging. You have to adjust your language, the way you talk about it, the way you present it. But that's where the real goal is hidden. And I think the other one is something. Somebody brought me this clip. I think it was Steve Jobs, which is horrifically, you know, stereotypical. But I think it was really interesting. He said, you know, we're kind of raised to follow the rules and to accept the world as it is. But once you realize that the world is as it is because it's run by people who are on average about as smart as you are, or slightly more, slightly less, but not significantly more or less, and that therefore they're just making things up as they go along, and therefore you can change things. You can make a better product. You can make a better widget and convince people. And there is a space for a better widget because the widgets that have been around till date are not there because they're the greatest. They're just there because they're there. And that's the great, you know, entrepreneurial opportunity. So that would be my word of wisdom.
Indeed. Indeed. Excellent parting thought for us there. Thank you very much, Christian. And hopefully that inspires some of our listeners to follow in your path, to build the better widget and come to GeoMob and talk about it and share it with us. So, I appreciate you taking the time, Christian, getting back here on the podcast with us, and obviously looking forward to your talk at a GeoMob event, but just tracking the progress of Terragens in general.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ed. It was a pleasure.
All right. Bye. Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.